Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy. And from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. This is NPR.
Wine dates back 8,000 years, but ancient wine was quite different than the drink we know today. For one thing, it tasted pretty bad. So bad that people would add things like lead, pine resin, and marble dust to improve the taste. On the next Fresh Air, Paul Lucas talks about the history of wine. His new book is called Inventing Wine. Join us.
Support comes from North End Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. North End Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
The KTO Holiday Auction is coming up this Saturday, December 8th. It's a fun event and a great time to get some fantastic gifts, all while supporting public radio. There'll be 200 items, experiences, and gift certificates, all donated by local businesses, including Coastal Helicopters, Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and Colette Costa. You can check out the full catalog at kto.org. And be sure to tune in to 104.3 FM or 102.7 or stop by the station on Saturday, December 8th for the KTOO Holiday Auction.
Good afternoon and welcome to a Juno Afternoon for Monday, the 3rd of December, 2012. This is your Monday host, Katie Bosler. In the first hour, we will have Scarlett Adam and we hope Sally Smith discussing this year's Holiday Pops concert. Sharon Lobaugh will discuss her show opening this Friday at Art Matters. We'll find out about this Wednesday's Saints and Sinners concert with Colette Costa. And Christina Moore and Beth Weigel from Discovery Southeast will be here to highlight their first Friday event at Foggy Mountain Shop and the upcoming Backcountry Film Festival. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on a Juno afternoon on KTOO News. And taking a quick look at weather, it is snowing, not heavily, but light stuff. Accumulation at sea level anyway, 2-3 inches, with some relatively light winds, 10 miles per hour. Here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Much of the middle of the country continues to struggle with drought. Several reservations haven't seen meaningful precipitation for most of the year, and conditions aren't expected to improve soon. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The latest map from the University of Nebraska's Drought Mitigation Task Force shows an area from southern South Dakota to the southern border of Colorado in the worst category of exceptional drought. In South Dakota, that covers the Yankton, Rosebud, and parts of the Pine Ridge reservations. The state climatologist, Dennis Toddy, says conditions likely won't get better this month.
The average amount of precipitation we get statewide, we really would not expect any big changes in December. We would not expect too much worsening because we don't expect a whole lot of precipitation during the month. The only positives you can get during this time of year is maybe some additional precipitation might ease some of the impacts.
Toddy says while parts of the plains can expect at least one big snowfall in early winter, warmer days in February and March are primary times for heavy snow. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
The U.S. Department of Labor is publishing its finalized tribal consultation policy. It establishes a formal process through which the department will engage in consultation with federally recognized tribes. It was directed by President Obama. The Department of Labor drafted the policy after holding listening sessions. A draft version was published in the Federal Register in April, followed by a comment period that ended in June. The final policy will be published this week. The Alaska Native band Bamiwa has released its fifth album. The group, made up of 3 Yupik men and 1 Inuit woman from Greenland, have been performing together since the 90s. Their music is based on traditional chants and drum songs. Their new double album, Side A, Side B, offers traditional songs on one side mirrored by modern versions on the other. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Bamiwa's soulful harmonies would not be complete without the voice of Karina Muller.
I think what's special about this album is that there's a side A and a side B, and side A, that's
done just with the voices and the drum, and the other side, we have all kinds of amazing musicians.
Stephen Blanchette, one of two Yupik and African-American brothers in the group, says his favorite track is based on a traditional song from the Unangan people.
Unangan people were formerly known as Aleut. The language is Unangah, and their people are called Unangan.
The song is about halibut fishing.
It's really intense. It has this, ah, ya, way, ya, ah, ya, way, ya.
Stephen's brother, Philip.
A lot of 60s and 70s style keyboards from, like, old clavinets. There's a lot of Hammond organ.
Philip credits the fourth member of Bamua for composing several of the songs on the album. His name is
Asi Gairayo.
He most likes a song he composed called Bubblegum. He got the idea for the song, he says, from a kid who was chewing gum in a traditional dance class he was teaching.
He thought he was sneaky, but I caught him and I started teasing him about it, and he got embarrassed, and that's what I put into the song.
Bamyue is a Yupik word that refers to the tail end of a dance. An alternate meaning is encore, or do it again, something listeners will be asking after they hear side A, side B. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
During this week in 1969, the Choctaw Community News was first published. It's a tribal publication of the Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler here in the studio with the producer of the Holiday Pops concert for Juno Lyric Opera, Scarlett Adam, and also Sally Smith, and I guess also of the board of Juno Lyric Opera, right? No, okay.
No, I'm the director. I can't serve on a board.
Oh, okay.
Legally, I can't serve on a board.
We'd love her, but.
All right, good to know. So you have, Scarlett, a really exciting lineup for this year's Holiday Pops. Tell us about it.
Well, we have about 50 singers this year, maybe a little over 50, and Sally's put together a really wonderful program of sacred music and secular music, and we have visiting performers. Alaska Pella will be singing with us this year. We're very excited about that.
Yeah, and tell us about Alaska Pella.
Sally?
Yeah.
Tell us about Alaska Pella.
Alaska Pella is a singing group formed at the University of Alaska Southeast by Christina Pollock.
Yes.
They've been singing a couple of years now. We're not sure how many will actually make it. You know, it's the holiday season and students scatter to the wind. But it's really exciting to have a performing group from UAS that's available. And since we're about encouraging the arts and encouraging singers, this is a great opportunity to partner with them so they get some exposure and people can understand there is music at UAS.
Yes, there is. Well, great. And that's so exciting. You know, working at UAS, they're one of our jewels, I'd say, of UAS right now, that, you know, Christina just had this dream to start an Alaska Pella group, if you will, and it's come to fruition, and now they're becoming a real important part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so Alaska Pella, and you also have some other things lined up.
Ooh, tell them about them.
Should tell them about the brass.
Yes, about the brass.
Every year we've been fortunate to have a brass group from the community just kind of materialize. And this year is no exception. They've gotten kind of a group of them is stuck together through the 5 years. And this year the tuba player said, you know, I don't like transposing a French horn part for tuba for Joy to the World. Let's see if we can find another composer. He set about to do that, and he found a man in Denmark who has composed a new setting for Handel's Messiah. It's the same, or not Messiah, for Joy to the World. Mm-hmm. It's the same music, but it's in a new setting that features brass. There are about 15 brass and percussion players participating this year. That will be our finale. So brass and chorus, and the audience will be invited to sing on one of the verses.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone has ever wanted the joy of singing with a full brass ensemble, this is your year and this is your piece.
Definitely. Sounds all very exciting. It is.
It is. The brass is going to start 10 minutes before the concert. So people coming in will have them to kind of set the tone. And then they'll play about 20 minutes into the concert hour before we take over. And then they'll come back and join us at the end for the finale.
So when and where is this all happening?
Well, the first concert is Saturday night at Northern Light United Church at 7:30 p.m. And then Sunday in the afternoon out at Chapel by the Lake at 4 p.m. Tickets are available at all of the usual outlets. You can go to www.junoopera.org or go to Hearthside or check out the Jack's website. I would recommend that people get their tickets early and not wait because they are smaller venues, so they will fill up. And this is a concert that is very popular every year. It's always full, and people don't like to miss it. So get your tickets.
It's fun.
Yes, it's a lot of fun.
It's fun. There'll be a couple of soloists. There'll be an ensemble. Scarlett's in the ensemble.
And tell us about the ensemble.
Oh,
is that a new thing to hear?
Oh, we need to leave that as a surprise.
Oh, it's just a little trio thing, you know. It's a lot of fun, and there are some wonderful voices. I mean, there are wonderful voices every year that sing with this group.
Who do you have this year?
Oh, well, let's see.
In addition
here.
To yourself.
Let's see. Bobby Mitchell is singing this year, and let's see, Jonathan Pollard, and let's see. Ooh, it's always exciting because when family members get to sing together, and so we have Paul Beck and his youngest daughter, Jessie Beck, they're singing. It's
and April McVeigh and her two daughters.
And her two daughters are singing. So it's a real nice way for families to get together and spend quality time together under the direction of Sally.
Yeah, which is, you know, come see, come saw. Yeah. The whole idea is for people to have fun, get into the holiday spirit, create a sense of community, mm-hmm. make it a gift to the community. So the ticket prices are only $10 for adults. Seniors and students are $8. Mm-hmm. It's probably the least expensive of the tickets available
right
now.
Right now, yeah.
And, you know, quality is never guaranteed in a group performance. But it's going to be quality, so I mm-hmm. think it's a good value for the ticket price. We don't make money on it. We don't have a grant to do this. Mm-hmm. It's just people coming together to make it happen. So it's your friends and neighbors.
True to form in Juno.
Yeah,
coming together
yeah.
and make it happen.
It's your friends and neighbors making a holiday presentation happen. I hope they're having fun doing it. I'm having fun doing it. And we expect our audiences will, too, because it's a bit of traditional mm-hmm. packed in to a season that's become a little less traditional.
Mm-hmm. And the venues, I imagine, are chosen for the great acoustics.
Well, they are nice. They are very nice locations to sing in. There's nothing more heartwarming and beautiful during the holidays than to be singing in the chapel with the snow falling behind and the trees and the lake. It's beautiful. It's
oh,
a
yes.
wonderful setting.
Scarlett is more of a politician than am I. We need a performing arts
We do.
Space.
We really do.
You think?
It's
you
very
think?
Difficult in Juneau to find a place to perform, especially when it's so busy. Like right now, there are so many wonderful things happening. So the venues have filled up. There's lots to see, but, yeah, good
well,
time.
Well, anything you'd like to add, ladies, about this Holiday Pops concert this weekend?
Just that we hope people will make an effort to come because we think it will contribute to the spirit of the season and not to the commercialism of the season.
Well,
you know, we all like to do those things and make other people happy with the material items, but this, we hope, touches the inside of us and makes us reflect, review, and hope for the future because it's just fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming in. Sally Smith, the director, and Scarlett Adam, the producer of Juno's Holiday Pops, the fifth annual, this right. Saturday at Northern Light Church at 7:30, this Sunday at 4 o'clock at Chapel by the Lake. Tickets at the usual outlets and at your website.
At JLO, right. JunoOpera.org.
All right. Happy holidays, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Katie.
Council presents Nuclear Doctrine, the Evolution of Strategic Thought in the Atomic Age with Christopher Preble, Wednesday, December 5th at 5 p.m. in the K2 TV studios. Preble is the Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute and author of several books. This event, possible with support from Greens Creek, Sea Alaska, GCI, Kensington, and Wassman & Associates. That's Wednesday, December 5th, 5 p.m. at K2. JWAC, bringing the world to Juno.
This is Bird Note.
On our broadcast tonight, Hurricane Sandy, a history-making weather event coming ashore this evening and changing the map of the coastline in some places.
How did birds and their habitat fare in the wake of the storm? To find out, we called Patrick Cummins, Director of Bird Conservation for Audubon, Connecticut.
It was extremely powerful. It's going to be a big job trying to assess the actual damage to bird habitat. There was significant erosion and overwashing of dunes and beaches all up and down the eastern seaboard. I've had the chance to get out along the shores of Connecticut and visit a few of the important nesting areas for things like piping plovers and least tern, and the damage is significant. Whether that's going to be good for the birds or bad for the birds is yet determined.
And what does Hurricane Sandy foretell about the future?
This storm really underscores the importance of undeveloped coastal habitat areas. It's likely that we're going to get more of these storms in the future, and as sea levels rise, these storms will have more significant impacts to coastal areas. So it really underscores the need to identify the key natural resources, both for birds, but also for buffer protection for human development. Barrier beaches and marshes and floodplains are really important buffers against natural disasters that affect humans. And despite the current fiscal situation, we cannot relax our efforts to protect these areas, not just for the benefit of the birds, but also as smart planning for our society.
To learn more, begin at birdnote.org.
And welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host. And with me now in the studio are Sharon Loba and Tana Kegler from Art Matters. Sharon Loba, of course, our artist, who will discuss her show opening this Friday at Art Matters and sponsored by Art Matters and at the Gold Belt. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. So tell us about the exhibit, Sharon.
Well, Tana consulted with me and asked if I would be interested in being one of her guests as an artist. And she was also approached by Gold Belt. That's a new venue for during the gallery walk. So
the Gold Belt Hotel downtown.
Gold Belt Hotel downtown, uh-huh. Yeah. So it's going to work out really good. We'll have some options for people for drinks and entertainment, and I don't mean really entertainment, but an open bar and that sort of thing. So
entertained by art.
Yeah, entertained by art.
Do you have some new works? Or
yes, I do. Mm-hmm. It's a mix of some older, but mostly a lot of new works. And she said, "Well, I've got to think of a theme, something like a mountains and the flowers." And I said, "Well, how about mountains, lakes, and the flowers nearby?"
So
what we're calling it.
That sounds lovely. Mountains, lakes, and the flowers nearby. I like that, especially for wintertime.
Yes, it's part of the Alaska State song.
Uh-huh.
Sharon told me the lyrics from that.
Yeah. How could I not know that? I've only been here 20 years.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we are very excited. Working on Sharon's show has been really fun for us because of the new original artwork that she has to share with the community, and some new acrylics that no one has ever seen.
Mm.
So we've just been framing them up and feeling very special because we have been able to view them before anyone else.
So is this prints and originals?
Yes, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But mostly originals this time.
Well. And some of her wonderful older works that everyone is familiar with, but maybe
presented in a different way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how in a different way?
Well, for a number of years, I've had Tony Pope, who's been a custom framer who's done my work, and he's hasn't been well the last year. Mm. So she's been doing the framing, and that's a very special creative part of what is done for artwork. So I think the framing is unique and special and different.
Yeah, I'm one of those people, I guess most of us really, who bring my framing to someone else because I just don't even know where to start. Is it that complicated?
It's very labor intensive, more labor intensive than one would think. If we practice only conservation framing, which means that once your piece is framed by us, it will last a lifetime. It won't be acid burned or devalued in any way. Everything we do is reversible. So you can make it an heirloom piece and pass it down through the generations of your family.
So how is it made reversible? How does that
It's the materials that you use. Everything that goes into putting the piece together can also be taken apart without any damage to the artwork that you're working with.
And then Sharon, I mean, I'm most familiar just from being affiliated with the public radio station here for a number of years. I remember many years ago now, probably at least 15, if not more, you did a poster for then KTOO.
Mm-hmm.
With it's the bear and the salmon and the river, something like that.
Yes, I've been around a long time. You're right about that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think that one of the shows that was most recently held at the Juno Arts and Humanities was 50 years of Mendenhall Glacier. So I've been painting a long time, and as it's disappearing now, it's getting more difficult.
Yeah, oh gosh.
I do a lot of watercolors, but I do some oils too. So this show has some of each.
And you'll have the prints on display and for sale and the originals. Mm-hmm. Will there be cards or anything like that?
Yes,
that nature?
I have a new set of cards I'm releasing for this too.
So this is at the Gold Belt Hotel.
Yes.
In the lobby?
This is in the banquet room.
Mm, okay.
Megan there has been kind enough to clear everything out for us. We have tons of wall space available for all of Sharon's beautiful works, and it's a new stop at this gallery walk, so we don't want people to miss it. If you come from downtown and you go straight across in front of the Gold Belt Hotel and head on over here and to the Jack, and it'll become part of the whole circuit.
There you go.
And then there'll be catering by Zen Restaurant, too, so that's kind of nice.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, that sounds good. That might attract too many people.
Yeah, so what time? The usual gallery walk time, I guess.
It's December 7th, Friday, from 4:30 to 7:00.
Okay. Well, Tana Kegel, and correct us.
Kegler,
mm-hmm. Sorry.
That's okay.
And Sharon Loba, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm just looking forward to putting it all together. I think it's a great space. We were very impressed with, we've done some looking at it. So it's pretty large, so it'll be a good show, probably about 30 items.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing it myself this Friday at Gallery Walk.
Well, I hope it's not too cold.
Oh, it's always fun. It's always a fun time.
Thanks.
All right, well, Sharon Loba and Tana Kegler from Art Matters, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Thanks. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host, and with me in the studio from the Juno Economic Development Council are AmeriCorps volunteers Sarah Buhlman and Milton Curtin, also Rebecca Parts from the Juno Economic Development Council. They're here to talk about the 6th annual First LEGO League competition happening this Saturday. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here.
Good
so
to be here.
Tell us about this event.
Well, it's going to be mostly from 9 to 5, but for spectators, the main time's coming is around 1.
It's going to be at Riverbend.
Mm-hmm.
Was originally at Centennial Hall, so that's where you heard it was. It's at Riverbend now. And it's going to be a great time for the community to show the support for the youth of Southeast Alaska. First LEGO League, if for those of you that don't know, it is a youth robotics competition with focus on learning and having fun. and the kids are really excited about it. We've been going around to the different teams, visiting, seeing how they're doing, and it's going to be awesome. They've made these robots, and there is kind of a little obstacle course set up, and it's going to be so much fun. There's going to be costumes, and it's going to be a great way to show support for the community.
Now, are Legos involved with these robots?
Yes. There's a section of Legos that's all robots, and they use those parts. And Lego puts out this this competition, and you know that's what the robots are made out of.
And okay, they can use any Lego pieces they want for the robots. And then there's the motorized parts that. Not quite the typical Lego stuff that most kids play with. It's kind of the next step of Lego. So your kid loves Legos, move on to First Lego League and throw in some science and some more learning, and you have these awesome robots.
Wow. This is really fascinating. I must confess I've never witnessed one of these, but the fact that you have robots that are actually working
right, yeah.
And, right here in Juneau is amazing.
Part of the competition is them completing tasks, so the kids have to program the robots. Mm-hmm. The kids do all the programming and the building of the robots to complete these tasks, which is really fun to watch and pretty awesome.
Yeah. Maybe I'm going to just step in for a minute. This is Becca, but these kids have been working since September. A lot of teams started even in August when the challenge was released to put together these robots, and like Milton just said, everything is pre-programmed. So they're laying out this whole strategy of how a robot's going to move around a table and complete up to 16 missions within a very tight time frame of 2.5 minutes. So every team comes in with their own robot design, their own field strategy, and then they're going to spend that full 8-hour day learning from each other, fixing things on the fly. I had a school board member 2 years ago come and say, man, you can see them learning as they go. So for people that want to see some successful things that are going on in our schools and successful ways for community volunteers to engage with our kids and help out in a classroom, all but one of our Juneau First Lego League teams this year are coached by community volunteers. We'll need more next year. It's a lot to add on to anybody's plate. So if it seems like something that might be up your alley, if you're an old Lego fan, come check it out, Riverbend, from 1 to 3 on Saturday, and see if maybe it's something you want to get more involved in, or at least just say congratulations to the kids and the adults that have put so much time into this.
And is this something that students get started with on their own at home, or is it in the schools that they kind of get going on this?
There's a bunch of different organizations. There's the Girl Scouts put forth some teams. The Boy Scouts have a team. Some do in schools. Just a wide variety of ways to get into it.
And the goal is FIRST, that acronym for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology, is a whole progression of programs. So they start as early as 6 years old, where kids meet in a Lego club, and it's called Junior First Lego League. And then it builds into high school robotics competitions, where kids are winning full-ride scholarships to colleges for engineering, for apprenticeship programs. And it can really take you all the way through school. There's homeschool programs. And like Milton said, it's in a bunch of community organizations, too.
Well, it all sounds very exciting, and I'm going to have to let you go soon because we do have Colette coming up to tell us about Saints and Sinners, the presentation, more than a presentation on Wednesday, the Nickelodeon. But have you two, Sarah or Milton, have you done anything like this on your own as children?
Well, we working with JEDC, we've kind of gotten to play with the same the robots and the programs just to understand what the kids are going through. Mm-hmm. And we were both fans of Legos growing up. I mean, what's not to love?
Right. Okay. Well, anything any of you would like to add?
Awesome.
I guess just one more time. First Lego League 6th annual this Saturday.
Yep.
Right.
Riverbend from 1 to 3 is going to be the main part of the competition. But honestly, stop by any time. But 1 to 3 is the
really
cool competition.
Part.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the participants are there earlier.
Participants are there from 9 to 5. We're still looking for a couple more volunteers. And if you have any questions about the program or the event, give us a call 523-2334 or visit stemak.org.
Well, thank you so much, the three of you, for coming in. And
thank you.
Have fun this weekend.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right.
I was standing by my window on a cold and cloudy day.
There's a bed home awaiting. Oh, I told her, undertaker, undertaker, please drive slow. 'Cause the lady that you're hauling, oh, I hate to see her go. Well, it's
the Staple Singers. That was Will the Circle Be Unbroken from Freedom Highway. And with me in the studio is Colette Costa.
Mavis Staples is not in the studio, unfortunately. She was in the Staple Singers. It's a great little history. Mavis and the family, and her dad was a preacher, and one day discovered that, of course, you know, they all sang in the choir, and put them together as a little family act, and they became hugely popular. And, then she became even more popular. Anyone who has not seen Lightning in a Bottle, go get that. It's at your local public library right downtown Valley and Douglas.
It's
a tremendous documentary about blues and mostly blues singers, and there's some gospel in there, too. But great documentary.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to see Mavis Staples about a year ago, August, in San Francisco. And oh, my God, talk about an inspiration.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's incredible. So, Colette, you're going to be singing on the Nickelodeon stage on Wednesday night.
That's what they tell me, but I don't know if I'll believe it when it happens, Katie, and I'm going to be there. Well, we've got our little Karen and concert series here that I think is pretty cool, pretty
yes.
with it. And so our newest one is going to be hosted by Grace Elliott. It's Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
The Blues Goddess?
Yes. And it will be, primarily it's just going to be me and Sammy Burroughs. We've got C. Scott Fry sitting in on bass, and Andy Engstrom on the drum god sitting in on drums. So we kind of had long, lengthy discussions about what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it, and decided that the idea behind this was sort of that crossover between early gospel and blues, and so we want to, you know, keep it as authentic as two white suburban kids can, and strip it down, keep it, you know, sort of backroom, gin joint, you know, clapboard, church, basic. No organs, no dancing girls. It's going to be frightening. I can't say. Oh, there will be a wonderful no-host bar that that Karen and we'll have there.
But
so,
we will
beer and wine provided.
And we will have our hostess, Grace Elliott, saying, can I get a witness?
She will be witnessing. Big time. So, yeah, we've just that's the idea of it. And we I have been just pawing through the best part of this whole thing is just Sammy and I have been sitting around trying to decide what song to do and just getting into this crazy YouTube vortex. The kind of thing where you start off watching, you know, Peter O'Toole doing Shakespeare and you end up watching Britney Spears getting arrested.
you got a little distracted along the way.
6 degrees of crazy. So we spent like hours just watching YouTube videos of Son House and Skip James and Mahalia Jackson, and it was awesome. We didn't get a lot of practicing done, but we watched some great videos.
Do you have some specific tunes lined up?
Yes, we do. We actually have a playlist. So nice. We decided to keep it, try to hit some of the popular ones, you know, the ones that people are expecting, Wade in the Water, and he's going to be doing St. Louis Blues, and I don't think he's doing Hard Times. He's doing I Got a Woman. I don't want to give it all away, Katie, my gosh. But there's some winter chicken dinners in there.
I'm looking forward to this very much.
You need to manage your expectations.
Hey, Colette, you never cease to amaze me. So I think it's going to be great. And so does Sammy. I mean, what a guitar player.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, Sam, do you know what song was it? Up Above My Head. There'll be music in the air. Do you know Up Above My Head? Nope. Oh, it's like Above My Head, there'll be music in the air. Above My Head. And he's like, huh. And then he's like, you mean like this? And then all of a sudden there's just this crazy noise coming. It's just incredible. He really
There you go.
He's
yeah.
got an amazing ear.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just had a practice last night with Scotty and Sammy and I would be going over a song, and Scott Fries, he's holding his bass, he's standing there, and he's calling out the chord changes, but he's not playing any of it. He's like, yeah, 1, 4, C, C minor, C7, G, got it, next. Like, I don't even speak that language, and it's pretty cool. We had a good time, and Sammy is really a great talent. We're very lucky to have him living here.
Yeah, and you know, I've tried to do a little bit of homework for this, just looking at the influence of gospel on the blues, specifically. That's what I Googled. But gospel has influenced just about every kind of music.
Yeah, well, and blues,
you can imagine.
Too. And blues, too. I mean, in some ways, they're intertwined, very intertwined, because they both came from slave songs and in that tradition, and one branched out. Well, they, you know, this is where the crossroads is. One branched out towards God and heaven, and one branched out towards hell.
There you go.
And even though they follow very similar structures in terms of the setup of the song and also chord progression and chord use, there's I think personally there's a big difference between the two. If you take it to a deeper level, one being that there's a difference between secular and sacred music, just in its, I guess, in its nature. You know, when you listen to, if you get a chance, and I'm trying to decide whether I want to actually play this video at the concert, which is a little probably verboten in the series, but there is a video of Mahalia Jackson singing at Martin Luther King's funeral, Junior's funeral, that is just, it's heartrending, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I imagine, I mean, at the root of this music is these spirituals.
Pretty much. And I'll be doing, I got two or three old spirituals that I'll be making of, as best an attempt I can to sing, so you'll forgive any inauthenticity on that part.
Well, tell me a little bit about your musical history as far as how
you
came to sing.
Well, I was born a poor black sharecropper, and in some ways it's typical, I guess, except that it's a very suburban take on it. I mean, I really never sang. I was in the choir at school, but I didn't really sing much. And then one day, for reasons past understanding, I started singing at my church. And I was the cantor at the church for years. And, of course, it was not gospel music. We were, you know, singing They Will Know We Are Christians by Our Love, which is a fine song. But
this was in Detroit.
This was in suburban Detroit,
okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had an interest in that music, and I always felt something very deep for it. And I was probably like late high school, early college that I really started getting into listening to a lot more gospel. And it was always older gospel. It was never contemporary gospel. That's not my bag. And, you know, I like to sing what I listen to. I'm not always qualified to do that. But
a lot of what you learned kind of came by ear.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. It sounds like that's kind of the same thing with Sammy. Probably. As well. You know,
yeah.
and it kind of reminds me a little bit of, have you read Keith Richards' autobiography?
No.
You got to read it.
I've heard it's great.
It's an absolute hoot. But, you know, he learned by ear. And he has this little like, kind of scratching, this little etching that he's made with, you know, the musical notes. And he says, you know, it's like they're in prison.
Nice.
And that's how he looked at it. And that, you know, it was all like just from the heart to the fingers is what he called it.
Nice.
So I guess in your case, it might be from the heart to the voice, but.
A bit. And I am, you know, I can have an incredible tin ear and be horrendously off pitch and flat. And so even though I spent 8 years in choir and I learned music theory and all that, sometimes I'm just a complete idiot. But I spent I always loved to sing, and I spent most of my, you know, I guess childhood, whatever, trying to sound like either Aretha Franklin or Karen Carpenter. And I mean, like...
Or somewhere in between.
not unsimilar to what guitar players, you know, they spent a really good guitar player has spent a lot of time alone in a room. And on some level, they're deeply, deeply disturbed. And I
listening
think,
to other music.
Yeah, yeah. And trying to play it. And
sure.
trying to sound... And I, you know...
Sure. Yeah.
Most people start off trying to sound like someone else. I mean, you know, Ella Fitzgerald was trying to sound like Connie Boswell. So, but yeah, just trying to hit those, not just hit the notes, but to get that inflection and that sound. And I can't because I don't have that kind of a voice. And I've always envied that resonance that certain soul singers and gospel singers have. But yeah, that was certainly how I learned a lot of these songs.
So this event is this Wednesday night at the Gold Town.
At the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater, secretly located behind City Hall. That's our little tagline. 10 years later, we're still secretly located.
7 o'clock, you on vocals, Sammy Burrows on guitar, Andy Engstrom on drums, and Scott Fry on
upright string bass.
Now, as far as I know, this is sold out.
Tis. Technically sold out, but we are considering adding a second show that night later afterwards. So probably like a 9 o'clock show, and Cheryl here at the station has started a wait list. I think she's already got a number of people on the wait list, and this doesn't mean like oh wow, I'm all that, I sold out a show. Okay, there's 70 seats. It's not that a big a deal, but. There's a good potential that we could add a second show that night. I'm not exactly sure how she's doing that.
But I imagine people should just really keep on checking that KTOO and KRNN website.
Yeah, KRNN.org is where she's got the tickets going on. She may have set something up to sign up. You could maybe just call her at the station.
586-1670 during regular business hours.
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah. I will try really hard to put something either on our website... on the goldtownnick.com or on our phone line, if we decide in the next day or even on Wednesday, you could call and say, hey, should I bother showing up, and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So, yeah, it'll be a great show.
Yes, and it's part of our KRNN Showcase series, which is so exciting.
Yeah, and I can't remember what our next one is. I think it might be you in March.
Really? Taking that long of a break? We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll keep people posted.
But thanks for hosting us, Katie.
Thank you so much, Colette.
You're welcome. And thank you, Juno, for whatever you're doing.
Yes. And again, your hostess on Wednesday night will be Grace Elliott, the blues goddess from KRNN. Coming up next, Beth Weigel from Discovery Southeast.
Weigel!
Here's Wade in the Water, more of the Staple Singer.
He's gonna tell us the world. broadcast of this program is made possible in part by the Alaska Budget Report, specializing in the straight scoop on state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 3rd of December, 2012. It was on this date, 1960, the musical by Lerner and Lowe, Camelot, opened on Broadway with the song at the end of the show, "Don't Let It Be Forgot That Once There Was a Spot for One Brief Shining Moment," that was known as Camelot. It's the birthday of Joseph Conrad, born in Poland in the town of Berdyshev, which is now Ukraine, 1857. Joined the merchant navy, sailed all around the world, and from it he gained the experience that went into his novels and stories, the best known of which, Heart of Darkness, 1899. English riverboat captain in the Congo, sent to retrieve an ivory trader, Mr. Kurtz, who has been living as a demigod among the African natives. Francis Ford Coppola used it as an outline for his story in his film Apocalypse Now. It was on this date, 1919, the Quebec Bridge over the St. Lawrence River was finally opened to traffic. They started building it in 1904, but engineers had made a mistake, and it weighed much more than they thought it did. An enormous bridge, cantilever bridge, 1,800-foot single span, 150 feet above the St. Lawrence. 3 years after they started building it, it collapsed. 75 workers died in 1907. They resumed construction 1913. 3 years later, the bridge collapsed again. 13 workers were killed. Finally opened to public traffic on this date in 1919. Still the world's longest cantilever bridge. And it's the birthday of the social reformer Octavia Hill, born in Cambridgeshire, England, 1838. When she was 26, she established a low-income housing project in London, where she offered music classes to the poor. She believed in the importance of open space in the city, which, she said, enables the Londoner to rise above the smoke and to see the sun setting in its glory. Here's a poem for today by Leanne Ellison Norman, entitled Tree. Today they are cutting down the old maple in the backyard. A crew of three men, one on a machine with a long neck that raises him into high branches, one who has dismantled a part of the fence that hugs the tree, one wearing spikes, his chainsaw and other tools hooked to his belt. High up, cutting thick branches among dense leaves, working back towards the scarred and damaged trunk. The old maple has blushed faint green in spring, glowed gold in fall, spun lace in winter, runway and airport for squirrels, birds, an owl 1 year, a pair of woodpeckers who nested, laid eggs, a starling killed the chicks. But it's older than we are old, and might come crashing down. It's being dismantled, the way age dismantles, higher branches cut first, then pruned back, until we can see from the sliced raw trunk 12 feet across an account of age. At dinner time, three squirrels, tentative, peer over the fresh stump, perplexed that their whole world has vanished. A poem by Leanne Ellison Norman, Tree, from her collection Breathing the West, Great Basin Poems, published by Bottom Dog Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, a service for managing businesses' online image by working to improve how they look in search engines and review sites, Reputation.com. And by Allianz. Allianz has been providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the United States since 1896. written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Oh, yes, we're in touch. Thank you, Garrison. This is Katie Bosler, your Monday host for June Afternoon. With me in the studio is Beth Weigel, the director of Discovery Southeast, along with AmeriCorps volunteer for Discovery Southeast, Christine Amor. Good to have you ladies in.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So you have coming right up a very exciting annual event.
Right. This is our third year partnering with Foggy Mountain to provide sort of a membership drive and appreciation night at Foggy Mountain, where this first Friday, December 7th, from 5 to 7, our members receive 20% off all their purchases of anything they buy at Foggy Mountain, as long as it's not a sale item.
What if you're not a member?
You can become a member that night. So, or you could
go
onto our website. Yeah, there at Foggy Mountain on Friday night, you can become a member, or you can go onto our website and become a member by using the online form there, which is discoverysoutheast.org. And it's been a great partnership. It's a fun night. You know, Santa's, of course, right across there, and Christine's going to have a little...
Capital City Weekly, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Capital City Weekly. Christine has a little activity for kids while their parents can go in and take a look at some of the things they might want to buy at Foggy and that discount.
What can the kids do?
So the kids get to hang out with me and do some snowflake studying and make some little snowflake... you know, diagrams, and then they can go across and get their pictures taken with Santa. So it's pretty sweet.
It's a good stop for first Friday.
Yeah, you're all set.
Yeah.
Especially for families. And if anything, there's 20% off.
Yeah, everything you buy between those 2 hours from 5 to 7, unless it's already sale item. So Scott and Betsy have been really great in partnering with us to do this, and we've had a great response to this membership sort of drive event over the last couple of years, so we look forward to seeing people that night, and you see a postcard in your mail if you're already a member, and if you're not a member and you're interested in learning a little bit more about Discovery Southeast, you can visit our website at discoverysoutheast.org. We also, for those people who aren't familiar with what we do, we are a nature education organization. We provide a lot of different programs, particularly for young kids to get outside and learn about nature, like things about like snowflakes in the wintertime and snow science and things like that.
And it's right in the public schools this time of year.
Right, so third, fourth, and fifth graders get to go out on a hike. And we have a couple other events coming up that we're well known for, our Discovery Days. That's where we take kids on in-service or holidays out on an adventure and drop them off and somewhere fun, and they go hiking with Christine.
With supervision.
With Christine and usually someone else. And we have one of those coming up on January 22nd. And then Christine, one of the big things she does as our AmeriCorps volunteer is organize the Backcountry Film Festival. So that's coming up in January as well.
And when is that, Christine?
So we have two showings, the 14th and 15th, which is they are a Monday and a Tuesday night. So what we normally do is we have the doors open at 6:30. It's over at Goldtown Theater. And we do sort of door prizes and getting everyone prepared. And then the films actually start at 7.
Right, and it's also, if you're a member, you receive a little discount to go see the Backcountry Film Festival, and we have another incentive that night to become a member, so you can become a member. So it's generally $30 to become a member at Discovery Southeast, and this way you are a member, you support our programs, you get discounts at places like Foggy Mountain this Friday, discounts to see the Backcountry Film Festival, discounts for our programs if you have kids. So that $30, you know, kind of comes back to you over the year, depending on how much you participate, and otherwise you're just supporting great local youth programs.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Beth Weigel, Director of Discovery Southeast, and Christine Amor, our AmeriCorps volunteer. Lots of AmeriCorps volunteers in today.
Yeah,
thanks
visit our website.
Okay, and I'll see you at Foggy Mountain between 5 and 7
That's
on
right,
first
Katie
Friday.
Bosler. You're a member.
20% off. Okay, folks, if you don't have that membership, go ahead and get it. You're listening to KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on the translators K276 AF 103.1 in the Valley and Ock Bay. I'm in Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K22 OBT serves Huna at 91.9. Nick Sturgeon Inlet and Icy Strait hear K2 on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also hear K2 on GCIA Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN is also at digital channel 872, KXLL at 873. You can always visit us online at www.ktoo.org. And now, all things considered.
Instead of screening for currently maybe something like 30 conditions, it would allow you to screen for hundreds, if not thousands, at birth.
The benefits and risks of genetic sequencing of newborns.
For Monday, December 3rd, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Bloch. Coming up, should all babies get their DNA decoded at birth?
Also, House Republicans make their opening bid in the negotiations over the deficit deadline.
And special interest groups line up to protect beneficial tax loopholes.
You don't want every charitable organization from the New York City Ballet to your local soup kitchen and the Catholic Church opposing it.
And a Miami neighborhood gets a boost from one of the nation's largest art fairs.
Anyone that has like this passion and excitement for creativity, they want to come here.
Those stories coming up. First the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. House Republican leaders today sent President Obama what they are calling a bold counteroffer aimed at heading off severe spending cuts and across-the-board tax increases on January 1st. NPR's David Wohn explains the White House has already rejected the GOP's proposal.
Shortly after GOP leaders sent a letter to the president outlining their counter-proposal on deficit reduction, the White House put out a statement saying the plan does not meet the test of balance because it lowers tax rates for the wealthy and sticks the middle class with the bill. In their offer, House Republicans flatly reject raising any tax rates on the wealthy, as President Obama would do, and instead promise additional tax cuts, all while raising $800 billion in additional revenue over the next decade in ways that are not specified. Republicans say their plan is based on comments made by Erskine Bowles, co-author of the Bowles-Simpson Deficit Reduction Plan, but Bowles says what they're offering is not his plan, and he urged both sides to give some ground. David Wall, NPR News, The Capitol.
Opponents of Egypt's